thank the Shesha Prabhu and Madhumati Prabhu, I don't know if they're here, but the, for kindly inviting me to give class at the Alachua Temple. I remember when I was in UK, I used to watch the live stream from the lecture at the Alachua Temple, so it's kind of interesting that I'm here, and I'm the one who's in class today. I must say I'm a very young devotee, so I feel awkward to sit like this in front of many senior devotees like yourself, but I will try my best to say something hopefully meaningful to you this morning. So today we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, so it's in the invocation. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Prepared all kinds of food. Jana pancha sapta rutti kare rashi rashi.
Jana pancha sapta rutti kare rashi rashi.
Anna vyanjana sabara he prikhe bakri.
Anna vyanjana sabara
he prikhe bakri. 5 to 7 men prepared a huge quantity of chapatis, which were sufficiently covered with ghee, clarified butter, as were all the vegetables, rice and dal. Navavastra padita he palar palashera pata.
Navavastra padita he palashera pata.
Randi randi thala uparashi kaira bat.
Randi randi thala uparashi kaira bat.
So, randi randi is cooking and cooking. All the cooked rice was stacked on the palasha leaves, which were on new cloth spread over the ground. Tare pashe rutti rashira prabhatha haira.
Tare pashe rutti rashira prabhatha
haira. Supa adi vyanjam banda chauti ke darira.
Supa adi vyanjam.
Around the stock of cooked rice were stacks of chapatis, and all the vegetables and liquid vegetable preparations were placed in different pots and put around them. Tara pashe dadi dutta matka shikarini.
Tara pashe dadi dutta matka shikarini.
Payasa matani sara pashe dariani.
Payasa matani sara.
Pots of yogurt, milk, buttermilk, and shikharini, sweet rice, cream, and solid cream were placed alongside the vegetables, purport. In this kind of ceremony, it is called, which is called anakuta, cooked rice is stacked like a small mountain for prasadam distribution. Hena mate anakuta karira sajam. In this way, the Anakuta ceremony was performed, and Madhavendra Puri Goswami personally offered everything to Gopal. Aneka Bhakta Varigida Subhasita Jar Subhasita Jar
Aneka Varigida Subhasita Jar
Bakudine Rakshutaya Gopal Kaira Sakar. Many water pots were filled with scented water for drinking, and Lord Sri Gopala, who had been hungry for many days, ate everything offered to him. Yadirapi Gopala Sabha Anna Vyanjana Kaida. Tanda Hasta Sparsha Puna Pemani Haira. Roshi Gopala ate everything offered, still, by the touch of his transcendental hands, everything remained as before. So this is the verse and the purport for today. So purport. The atheist cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing in the form of the deity, can eat at all the food offered by his devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita, 7:26, Krishna says, Patram pushpam parantoyam yome bhaktya payachati tat aham bhakti upapritam ashnami payata anaha. If one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. The Lord is Purana, complete, and therefore he eats everything offered by his devotees. However, by the touch of his transcendental hand, all the food remains exactly as before. It is the quality that is changed. Before the food was offered, it was something else. But after it is offered, the food acquires a transcendental quality. Because the Lord is Purna, he remains the same even after eating. Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Ashishate. The food offered to Krishna is qualitatively as good as Krishna. Just as Krishna is Adhyaya, indestructible, the food eaten by Krishna, being identical with him, remains as before. Apart from this, Krishna can eat the food with any one of his transcendental senses. He can eat by seeing the food or by touching it. Nor should one think that it is necessary for Krishna to eat. He does not become hungry like an ordinary human being. Nonetheless, he presents himself as being hungry, and as such, he can eat everything and anything, regardless of quantity. The philosophy underlying Krishna's eating is understandable by our transcendental senses. When our senses are purified by constantly being engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, we can understand Krishna's activities, names, forms, qualities, pastimes, and entourage. Ata Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Rahyam Indriyahi Seva Mukhehi Jivado Svayam Devas Pratyataha. No one can understand Krishna by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1, 2, 3, 4. The devotees understand Krishna through revelation. It is not possible for a mundane scholar to understand Krishna and his pastimes through research work on the non-devotional platform. Om Abhyana Kriyanta Shadam Jana Sharataya Chakshuram Bhutam Vena Tasmai Shri Vade Namaha Pancha Kalpata Vita Shakri Pasindha Deva Chapatana Vakini Vyo Vaishnam Vyo Vyo. So, just to review what was going on first. So, what is this story in chapter 4? Do you remember from the last Saturday? What's the context? Anyone? What is this whole feast going on?
This for who? Rediscovering Gopal eating.
Yes, exactly. So this is the process of discovering Gopala deity, and then this deity was found in which place?
Govardhan
Hill, exactly. So this is Mahaprabhu narrating this story, which he heard from his own spiritual master, Ishvara Puri. So this is the story of spiritual master of Ishvara Puri, so that's the spiritual that would make the Madhavendra Puri spiritual deities, how do you say, Param Guru, I think, that's the terminology used. So the Madhavendra Puri is the spiritual master of spiritual master, right? So the so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is narrating this story of Madhavendra Puri, who discovered this Gopala deity, which was buried beneath Govardhan Hill, and then now it is still worshipped by the followers of Vallabha Acharya Sampradaya. Exactly. So according to Vallabha Sampradaya, they call this deity Srinathji. Exactly. So the purport on the Madhya Lila 4.1, the first verse of this chapter, Prabhupada writes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur annotates that this Gopala deity was originally installed by Bhatra, the great grandson of Krishna. Madhavendra Puri resided, rediscovered Gopala and established him on top of Govardhan Hill. This Gopala deity is still situated at Natadvara and is under the management of the descendants of Vallabhacharya. So this deity is still there. We don't quite, the deity is not under our worship, but then the worship of the followers of Balabhacharya. It's an interesting story that how this deity came about. So as Prabhupada says, translating Bhaktivinoda Sanskrit, so this deity was originally installed by Vajra, who was the great grandson of Krishna. So this deity was originally worshipped at the time of, I guess, a little bit after Krishna's pastime. And if you look at the Skanda Purana, there is a section called Bhagavat Mahatmya, the glorification of Bhagavatam. And then there is the description of how the Maharaja Vajra, or Vajranava, how he sort of discovered the Mathura Vrindavan area, and then sort of he installed many deities. So this is a translation from Skanda Purana, the Bhagavad Mahatmya section. With his help and the blessings of Sandivya, that is the sage, Vajra came to know the various spots of Govinda, the carpetesses and cowgirls. He named them duly and established them. He made many villages, he made many village settlements and colonies, ponds, wells, lakes, and other amenities for the public were constructed. The images and the lingas of Shiva and other deities were installed. The images of Govinda, Hari, and other devas were installed. He propagated exclusive devotion to Krishna in his realm and rejoiced. So these deities were installed quite some time ago, I guess a little bit less than 5,000 years ago. Because of Muslim invasion, the Pujaris, they're afraid that these Muslims may come and destroy the deities. So basically, they hit all these deities underground, and then they themselves kind of went away. So since then, it was kind of left underground, and no one knew. So the Gopala deity was one of them. The another famous deity which was discovered like this was the deity of Govinda Devji, which is now worshipped in which city?
Jaipur,
exactly. And this Govinda Devji deity was initially discovered by one of the Goswamis. Rupa Goswami, exactly. So Rupa Goswami one day discovered the Govindaji, just like Madhavendra Puri discovered the Gopala deity, and then he was worshipping the deity. What was the temple in Vrindavan which Rupa Goswami built for the Govindaji? Is that the Govindaji temple? So that was, and then he had the cooperation of Mughal Emperor, I believe that was Akbar, correct me if I'm wrong. With the cooperation of Akbar, I believe the Govindaji temple in Vrindavan was one of the highest and the largest temple construction in South Asia. But of course later when I think it was Aurangzeb, when the emperor changed, and then when the Mughal regime became sort of hostile to Hindus again, they basically, the story goes that there was the light on top of Govindaji temple, and the Mughal emperor noticed that light was above his palace, so he realized that, well, there is something higher than himself, and he didn't like it, so he ordered his servants to go off and jump off the top of the Govindaji temple. So now it has never been restored, so it's being chopped off even now. So and then because of this hostile treatment by the Mughal king, the Govindaji, also these deities, they escaped, they left the Vrindavan, and they moved around here and there for quite some time, for like about 60 years, and eventually they arrive Jaipur, and Jai Singh, the second famous king of Pajabaha dynasty, he sort of decided to make them the family deity for the dynasty. So these, how do you say, very deities were there, and Madhavendra Puri discovered the deity and sort of installed the deity on top of Govardhan Hill. So now the villagers help that process, and then they're going to have a big feast in celebration of this installing of this new deity. Now, of course, the Madhavendra Puri is very important for our Sampradaya. As already mentioned, he is the guru's guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the who was also the Krishnadas Kaviraj in Chaitanya Charitamrita says he was the kind of sprouting seed of this tree of prema. So he is the one who kind of started this ecstatic mood, because we accept that Madhavendra Puri belong to which Sampradaya? The fourth Sampradaya, the
Madhava.
Yes. So there is the Sri Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, right? And Rudra Sampradaya, and Sri Sampradaya, right? So the Madhavendra Puri belong to Madhava Sampradaya, which is teaching, which maintains the teaching of which one of these four?
Brahma.
So we identify ourselves, we call ourselves Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya, meaning that we follow the teaching of Lord Brahma, which was followed by Madhvacharya, also called Ananda Tirtha. And Madhavendra Puri was supposed to be in the line of these, in the line of succession coming from Madhvacharya. And his Madhavendra Puri's immediate successor is called Lakshmipati. So the Lakshmipati was also supposed to be in Madhvacharya's line. And then, so from Lakshmipati, you go back people like Yadav Tirtha, Jaya Tirtha, and then you can trace back to Madhvacharya. And then Madhvacharya, well, there are different ways that you can trace the lineage from Madhvacharya back to Krishna, but supposedly Madhva tradition, their account is that the Madhvacharya went to Himalaya as a part of his Digvijay, and he met the Vyasa himself there, and he was taught directly by Vyasa. So that's why sometimes the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, they claim that the Madhvacharya was a direct disciple of Vyasadeva. In any case, there are sort of, so coming back to Madhavendra Puri, there are sort of conflicting account about Madhavendra Puri, who he was. We don't know much about him. Apparently he was also somewhat connected to the Ballabhacharya, the Ballabha Sampradaya. They claim that the Madhavendra Puri taught Ballabhacharya in Varanasi, and then Madhavendra Puri ordered Ballabhacharya to worship this Gopala deity, which now they call Sri Namji. But of course, we claim that the Madhavendra Puri was our acharya, so there is some conflict in account. But it's interesting to see how the different groups of people claim when there is the charismatic people like Madhavendra Puri, how the different groups of people.
Siddhas Babaji was Bhaktisiddhanta's speech master.
When he passed away, so many people came out and playing for his body, right? So that's the So that's the Madhavendra Puri. And then now going to this the description of feast. So we read about 10 verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita now, and there were lots of preparations, which makes us a little bit hungry. And of course, next week, next Saturday, we have Gaura Purnima, and I'm sure that the Alatra temple is going to cook a big feast. So the cooking of food, preparing food and offering food to Krishna, that's a big part of our tradition. Prabhupada said the Hare Krishna, or our tradition, is what kind of religion?
Kitchen
religion, right? So Prabhupada said, indicated by a statement that the actually cooking and in the sharing prasadam among devotees, that's a very important part of devotional service. And I was just thinking, in Japan, I'm from Japan, native. In Japan, about a few years ago, some scholar who's been studying the Bodhiya Vaishnava tradition for some time, he published the Japanese translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So the devotees were quite excited because unfortunately we haven't published the Prabhupada's, the translation of Prabhupada's version of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So basically Japanese devotees who don't read English, they don't know much about Chaitanya Charitamrita. But when this came out, devotees were quite overjoyed because now we can read about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates in Japanese. But unfortunately, that the Japanese translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita cut off the description of the food. And the reason he did that was because, well, basically, because of the in terms of publication, he could basically translate so many pages, and so basically his entire translation couldn't fit, so he had to cut off something, right? So then he basically concluded that description of this food is not very important, therefore he decided to cut off. So now at the end of the purport of this verse, Madhya Vida 477, in the purport, Prabhupada says, it is not possible for, this is Prabhupada's purport, it is not possible for mundane scholar to understand Krishna and his pastime through research work on the non-devotional platform. And so when I heard that he cut off this ecstatic description of these various opulent food descriptions, I was thinking, this is what Prabhupada means by a statement like, you know, you cannot understand Krishna and Krishna's pastime through mundane scholarship. I mean, it is true that for someone to dedicate his life in translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's definitely attracted to Krishna. So in a sense that you can say he's a Krishna Bhakta as well. I mean, in a sense that he's doing great service by providing Japanese translation. I mean, that's wonderful. But still, I don't think he has the faith, or I don't think he practices. So, and because you don't practice, you don't experience, you don't taste the importance of prasadam, there's certain things you can understand by just reading books, but then there are certain things that you cannot understand unless you actually do it, right? So like eating prasadam, like unless you eat prasadam, it just, you cannot actually appreciate. I remember when I was in Tokyo Temple, in Tokyo there is, I mean, it's a small temple, we don't have manpower, so we cannot cook opulent prasadam, so every day was kitchen, right? So every day was Khichdi. Just every day, same Khichdi. You know, 7 days a week. Nice. So, but I remember just somehow it was so nectarian. You know, I couldn't understand. I mean, at that time, that was like 10 years ago, so I didn't know much about philosophy. I didn't know, you know, what Prashadam is. I didn't quite, you know, sort of, I didn't know how to appreciate it. But if you taste it, and you could immediately feel, wow, there is something, and you know, there is something sort of almost like intoxicating. And then like there was also Govindas in Tokyo Temple, I know in Tokyo. And then if you go to Govindas, that's a restaurant, so you have to pay like $10, right? But then I used to say, well, actually, it's better to eat free khichdi than go to Govindas and pay $10, because somehow that simple khichdi was somehow more tastier. So, but these things, you know, the reading about these, you know, ecstatic feasts about very different kinds of spinach and yogurt and milk, and you know, like reading these things doesn't really give you the actual experience. You have to participate in it, you have to eat it, right? So, and then that the effect of prasadam you can see in this glorious Krishna lunch, which goes on provided by Krishna House as well. I mean, I see on campus, I eat a Krishna lunch every day, so I see people at Krishna lunch every day, and it's amazing how the not just devotees but the students actually come about. And since I came here like for past 6-7 months, actually I've observed that some of the students who used to be just the guests who come and then take lunch, then some of them actually start helping out Krishna lunch. And then at some point, because of the association, they're attracted to devotees. Then so they come to Krishna House, and then sometimes they come to Mangalarti. Like I think Brian's here today. Maybe he left. Maybe he's in the kitchen. But so I've seen actually, you know, his students getting sort of attracted to Krishna House and sort of getting deeper into devotional service. Oh, there you go, Brian. Good morning. So it's very exciting to see that that progression actually happening. So in the same way, chanting of holy name is also something we have to practice in order to taste the taste of the sweetness of Krishna Nam. So therefore, the proper quotes this Atta Shri Krishna Nama Dina Bhavet Prasam Indriyahi, right? So Sevam Kehi Jiva Do Svayam Evas Pravdiyadha. So proper quotes this verse and it says we cannot appreciate this devotional service and the transcendental nature of the image and also transcendental nature of devotional service without actually being engaged in the service. So if you look at the, so this is a quotation from Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. So if you look at the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, this section is describing the 64 angas or the limbs or items of devotional service. And in this verse, Atashri Krishna Namadi, that's the verse explaining the 63rd item, which is Nama Sankirtanam. So the glorification of the holy name. And then this is actually the second verse. And then so first verse, so the Rupa Goswami is describing this Nama Sankirtanam by quoting the Padma Purana. So the first verse of quotation goes Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nichamukto Abhinna Kvam Nama Namukho. And then comes this Atta Shri Krishna Ramadhi. Okay? So this first verse, first quotation from Padma Purana says the Nama, the Krishna's name, is Chintamani. What is Chintamani? The touchstone. So basically, it magic stone which provides any kind of any wishes, which fulfills any wishes. And it is Krishna. The Dharma is Krishna himself. Krishna, who is Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, whose form is Chaitanya and Rasa, is his consciousness and is full of Rasa. And it is Purna, the full, and Shuddha, the pure, and Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated. Why? Because the Abhinatva Namanaminoho, because there is no distinction, Abhinatva, between a Nama, the holy name, and a Nami, the person who possesses that name, who is Krishna. Right? So, because there is no distinction between Krishna and Krishna's holy name, so therefore the holy name is actually Krishna himself. And therefore, Ataha, Sri Krishna Namadi, because the holy name is identical with Krishna, and because it is of transcendental nature, so therefore the Sri Krishna Namadi, the name of Krishna, etc. So this etc. Means Nama, Krishna's Nama, and three more. I will give you him Rupa, that's the second one. And so the Nama is the name, and the Rupa is the form. So name, form, pastime, and the qualities. Okay? So Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. So actually, they're revealed in this succession. First Nama, and then form, and then qualities of, I'm sorry, it could be, anyway. So Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila. So these things are revealed all through by chanting holy name. And Navavikrahyam Indriyahi. So they cannot be grasped, grahyam, by the Indriyahi, by the senses. However, Seva Mukheti Jivado, so when the tongue, etc., Jivado, is Seva Mukhe, so Seva Ummukha. So Ummukha is literally like this, you know, like looking towards something, looking up something. So Ummukha literally means like looking for. So when the tongue, etc., meaning all the senses, are looking for to perform seva, the devotional service, then svayam eva sprautyataha. These nama, rupa, guna, lila, they all sprout, sort of spontaneously manifest themselves. So this is why we chant every day minimum 60 rounds. And then this is why we have to actually practice. So just like the feast, just reading the description of the feast cannot give you the actual taste. In the same way, reading about the holy name, it's good to have knowledge, but ultimately just reading cannot give you the experience. Therefore, we have to chant. Okay, now actually it's 45. So probably I had a few things more, but yeah, I should stop here. So is there any question? Just to keep on time, please.
Well, since hearing is one of the nine processes of devotional service, couldn't hearing also be sufficient? Even just hearing about pastimes or about the holy name or about the feast, couldn't one also, if one's perfecting the hearing, wouldn't also that be sufficient?
So the question is, would the hearing be sufficient? Yes, the Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Sevanam, so the Smaranam and the Kirtanam, so these are two important, and then actually Shravanam, the listening, comes first. And in order to do Kirtanam, you have to first listen to it. I mean, to listen to it in a sense that first you have to learn proper pronunciation, and Krishna. So that's very important. But to come back to your question, I suppose it would be perfectly possible if you perfect the shravanam. I suppose it would be perfectly possible to attain liberation by that. But the point is the Nama Sankirtan is according to Mahaprabhu and also according to Bhagavatam is the Yuga Dharma for this age. So therefore, basically, if you want, it's very effective. So if you want to take advantage, not. I think I would say it is true that any one of the nine processes would give you perfection, but the chanting is most effective. So therefore, why don't we take advantage of that merciful arrangement?
Yes, the example that's often given is examining a jar of honey from the outside doesn't give you a real experience of the honey until you open it up and have a taste.
Exactly. So it is unfortunate that the because I'm in academia, so I have many colleagues who are not necessarily Krishna devotees. I have had colleagues of many sorts, and it is sometimes sort of sad to see that someone could study, for example, actually our tradition, and then still can remain atheist and then not really appreciating Krishna's mercy. So that's sad, but ultimately, it's between individual living entity and Krishna. So I'm sure whoever does any contact. I mean, it is said that the Shishupal attained liberation, even though he was hating Krishna. He attained liberation because he was thinking so much about Krishna in a negative way, and so was Kamsa, right? So even though not everyone is immediately attracted to Krishna when there is opportunity to associate with devotees or when they're informed about devotees, but nonetheless, we should never underestimate the sort of the potency or the effect of holy name and association of devotees. I'm sure this contact would affect them in the long run. So, of course, then we can always pray for them that someday the Krishna will be merciful. And it's just a matter of removing the anartha. Ultimately, everyone is happy to see Krishna, but because there is certain sort of covering over the soul, over the heart, not everyone. It's just like if those who wear eyeglasses, if your eyeglasses are, if you're outside very cold and you get into steamy kitchen and then your eyeglasses are covered and you cannot see anything. So because of the covering, they cannot appreciate Krishna immediately. But through Agyata Smriti, through eating Krishna lunch, through talking to devotees, they're gradually getting us purified. And actually, that's how we came here, right? If anyone who knows, if you remember how you came about, or in previous lives, that's how we came about.
By the mercy of Krishna, you are getting a chance to hear something about him and his devotees. So you want to disseminate that knowledge which you receive in the form of a chanting, to distribute it. And as you distribute it more by in the form of a chanting, you will have more understanding, more realization. good, but you wanna, in the form of chanting, you wanna distribute it to people.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I think the Alatra community is the probably biggest in the States, as I believe. And then I've been to many temples in different countries, but the Alatra and Krishna House are the, I would say, one of the most successful communities. So therefore, there are many ecstatic opportunities to go for Harinam. And just to come into temple and have association with other devotees, you know, there are not many people where you see this many devotees for morning program. Okay, so I've been to many temples where it's like huge, big temple rooms and only like two, three devotees for morning program because it used to be big, but now they're not left, sort of thing. So it's you are all very fortunate to be in this community. So please take advantage of this situation. And yes, so that we don't regret later, because padam yat vipad vipadam. So we really don't know when we are leaving from this material world. So please take advantage of this wonderful temple and opportunity for this wonderful association. So thank you very much, and I will end here. Hare Krishna. Jaya Jagda Vidya Ki.
He's teaching all these residents from
hospitals. How are you?
And anyway,
one or two
meetings afterwards. Oh, everything's good. You're helping your mom.
Yeah,
it's okay. Even
well, basically, I figured out,
oh, you're doing great.
I installed a program where basically,
and they kind of like, you know, it's like you don't have, I don't have a relationship
with people. And then I use microphone.
And all the residents shifted out at the end of the month. I mean, I could get a hold of this. The head surgeon, he was the chair of the EMT department.
Yeah. So I tried the program. It seems to be working. Do you just like do the presentation by yourself on the screen or the computer?
Rajit Patel.
Oh, an Indian doctor.
Yeah, his father was the most respected surgeon in the whole hospital. Retired.
Right.
It's interesting. You know, it's in his family line.
No.
As far as I know, he's not. I met him 5 years ago when I first had this whole thing.
And
he came one of the
meetings. This semester I'm teaching in Asia. I think you
need to have surgery. And actually I signed up and I did a bunch of tests and that's all I wanted to do. And I freaked out. So I was waking up at 9 and just switching his hand. Because I knew what the surgery was, and it was just I couldn't fix it.
You know,
And so you know, being all sorts of holistic stuff for so many years. I've been hearing about different cancer cures and this and that. And I think it's like benign tumors are much more difficult to deal with. Cancer. Huh. There's a lot of cancer cures. I mean, I've learned a lot. There's a lot of cancer cures going on.
Did you go to Miami?
I mean, there's a lot of, especially in combination, you can do a bunch of things.
Yeah.
But benign tumors are different entity.
They have to be dealt with, and even if they're not, they still have to be dealt with in some way.
I mean, if they weren't in a crucial, you know, life-threatening location, some people say just tolerate it, because it's kind of tricky if you disturb a benign tumor. It can either go malignant or even cut it out. There's a chance of if you spill some of the contents or something, you can reinfect the tissue. But, I mean, so some people say if it's not disturbing, you just leave alone. But this was soft palate, right between the mouth, throat, and nasal. And it hadn't hardly grown in 5 years. But then in June, I got a CT scan, and it noticed it was like, and that's what I was experiencing, swelling of the mucosa. And it was just starting to really disturb the swelling of the breathing. And I found out also last spring, after years not knowing, that the tumor had caused sleep apnea. You know,